I want to take a minute to talk to parents, because this is something I didn't fully appreciate until recently. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is showing up earlier and earlier in kids. And I've learned it's about more than just seeing clearly in class. If myopia progresses over time without being addressed, it can lead to bigger vision challenges down the road. That's why I'm glad conversations around children's eye health are changing. When you take your child to an eye doctor, you're not just getting a prescription. You're getting insight into how their eyes are developing and what options might help support them in the long term. One of those options is Essilor Stellest lenses. They're designed specifically for kids and used as part of a myopia management approach, all while still correcting everyday vision. And from what I understand, they're worn just like regular glasses, nothing complicated for kids or parents. Every child is different, so the best place to start is with a comprehensive eye exam. For me, it's about being proactive now to help protect their vision for the future. Visit Essilor.com to learn more about Stellest lenses and to find an Essilor expert eye care professional near you. That's Essilor.com.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
A piece of metal the size of a car door came flinging through the air, everybody screaming heads up, but our director, who was new, she didn't look up and she went down.
Because I was just like, I don't know if she's going to survive this. And we were like, oh my God, for a TV show, somebody just got killed?
Welcome, MythFits.
Hey, MythFits, it's another episode. I'm Carrie Byron.
And I am Tori Belaichi.
What you been up to lately, Tori? You got anything interesting happening?
Yes.
Really?
I'm freaking out because it's like another dream come true.
Oh
my God. So I just got back from LA. We were filming the new Jackass movie.
No, you're not.
Yes. And it's just like, I'm like pinching myself because the last time the Jackass Forever, I was in one scene and it was during COVID. And so it was like, we came out to set. We were all having masks, so we couldn't really hang out, with everybody. And I only shot for like half a day. This time, Johnny Knoxville announced that it's, I think it's June 26th. They're premiering
the movie.
And so I reached out and I was like, I got ideas. I want to come down. I want in. And so I got to go down for a couple of days and just hang out on set. And then we filmed a couple of scenes with.
Did they take your suggestions? Is something in the movie what you came up with?
Yes. And I am just like, it went so well.
Was there anything so crazy that they said, no, we won't do that? What's on the reject list?
I pitched them surfing with dynamite because I felt like when we tested it on Mythbusters, we had that like robotic paddleboard surfboard that Grant made. And I was like, if you were a really good surfer, you would know you might be able to ride one of those little waves.
But it wasn't about riding the wave. It was if you were in the water when it went off because you fell in, the shock wave would kill you.
No, but what I suggested is that we have boats out there. Like, because remember the bomb techs who set off that explosion? They were in a boat. So it's like you would have everybody with surfboards in a boat. You set off the explosion and then they jump in. So it's like after the event has happened, now it's safe. And now the wave hopefully would be big enough that you could surf it because that robot, it was just going like one pace, right? A surfer would feel like, oh, I need to swim. I need to paddle faster to catch this wave. So that was my suggestion.
But how much explosive would you need to actually replicate that wave? Because we had a huge amount under the water when we were blowing up the shark, and then the radius of the wave did not make a big wave. It was sort of, I don't know, it was a little anticlimactic for the wave.
Right. No, that was insane. Like it shot, remember we had a buoy out there. It shot it up like 600 feet in the air. I mean, it was one of the biggest like tidal wave, you know, a splash of explosion. Yeah, but
it went all straight up and then came down. It didn't like create a surfable wave.
But I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I feel like if you would have to do some experimenting, like how deep, like if you put the explosive deeper in the water, it's going to be more of pushing all that water. So you might get more of a wave. We had it floating right on the surface in the shark. And so it just blew up all that water and, you know, made this huge tower of water. But if we lowered the explosive further underneath, would that just push and create a wave? I don't know.
Regardless, you came up with something that was too crazy for Jackass.
Well, it wasn't too crazy. It was just logistically, it wouldn't have taken a lot more time.
Man, that's sick. Well, congratulations. Oh, I can't believe that you're gonna be in the movie. Now I gotta go see it.
Oh my God. So it's like I'm still like pinching myself because it's like, oh my God. Because I remember when Mythbusters, it was like during the middle seasons where we were really getting like more and more popular, and New York Times did the critic watched our show, the new season, and he was like, these bunch of jackass wannabes, blah blah blah, and I was like, that's not hurting my feelings, like that's actually exactly what I'm trying to do. I want to be a jackass.
I know how much you wanted to do this. You were so excited last time. Were there any like behind the scenes antics that happened that aren't in the movie?
Totally. Like they have the tasers that are just all around. And it's all of a sudden you hear that, and you're just like,
wait, run away. Like they're not on screen. They're just all tasing each other.
Yep.
Just for fun. Did you get tased? Did they tase you, bro?
I did get hit in the balls by Jeff Tremaine. That felt like
that's legit. Like, right there.
Now I'm part of the family. You know, the stuff they do on the set is like, you can get hurt, but it's never like so dangerous that you would get like killed. You know what I mean? Not like pumpkin chucking.
Oh God. You know, actually today we have Kyle Hill on, who is a YouTube creator. And he's been doing some really interesting stuff lately, like a docuseries on Chernobyl, where he actually goes to Chernobyl. He's become the go-to guy for nuclear stuff. Like he's the expert, and his docuseries is very cool. I've been watching it lately.
He's also part of the Mythbusters Discovery family because he was the host when they revamped Mythbusters: The Search. He was the host of the show, and then he also co-hosted Pumpkin Chunkin' with us.
Which was honestly one of the most dangerous shows we've ever worked on and never saw the light of day.
It was so bad that it never aired. So stick around. You're going to want to hear some of the behind the scenes stories that we have with him and find out what else he's working on.
And you can hear about one of the craziest, most dangerous things that ever happened that no one ever knew about. The story got completely buried. The episode never aired. And this is probably the first time we're really fully talking about it because Kyle was there.
It was his first time doing the Pumpkin Chunkin'. He was all green and excited to do it. And then this horrible, horrible tragedy happened.
Stick around. We will tell you the full story.
We have a very fun guest. He's kind of like part of the family because he hosted The Search for Mythbusters. He also, the new Mythbusters, and then he also hosted Pumpkin Chunkin' with Carrie and myself, which never saw the light of day, which we will talk about that episode. Kyle Hill, he is a science entertainer and nuclear dude. Welcome, Kyle. Yeah. Bro, your hair.
I know.
Your hair is looking fabulous as usual.
Since I met you, it just kept growing. Happy to be back. Happy to see your lovely faces again and all you Mythbits. We have a lot that we could talk about and go over, especially in the old Mythbusters tradition. But it's great to see you both again, really.
Thor of science.
Yes.
Kyle Hill.
Well, my agency used to pitch me as Science Fabio, but then I think that's too that's too far awesome. Removed. That's too far removed from the current generation. So now it's science Thor, I suppose.
So you're kind of, you know, part of the extended Mythbuster universe. Did you did you ever watch the show, or were you just like cast because of your science communication skills?
No, I you know, if you want the full story, but I don't know if you and I ever really talked about this. But how it went down is Dan Tapster, showrunner at the time, or was a showrunner on Mythbusters. He reached out to me directly via email while I was working at a company called Nerdist. And it's because I was publishing articles about Mythbusters at Nerdist and about how much the show affected me. And he reached out directly when I was just a young kid, moved right out to Los Angeles. I'd only been there 2 years at that point. And I think I was, well, we talked about being a contestant on the show, and I said, I don't feel like losing in front of the entire nation. So I prefer to host it.
I know, I'll run the show.
In case the audience doesn't know what Mythbusters the Search is, because they just quit watching after Mythbusters ended, Mythbusters the Search was, they were trying to re-energize the brand with new Mythbuster hosts. They were holding a reality competition, and Kyle was the host of this show, and it was an elimination competition to find who would be the new Jamie and Adam.
Yeah, it was a really interesting format for doing that. Looking back 10 years on, I mean, I suppose it was the business move was kind of ahead of the curve, because you see everyone with a popular IP doing this kind of thing now.
Right.
But, you know, so looking back, it makes sense that they wanted to do that. But at the time, I think a lot of people were kind of confused and skeptical. I was too. And I was just, I'd only been professionally communicating and hosting for like 2 years at that point. So I went in very green, no hair and makeup on set, which I remember because, man, I look greasy. But coming back to your original question, Carrie, did I ever watch it? I really tried very hard to capture the original feeling of what Mythbusters was. Before I even started filming, I reached out to Adam for the first time. I sat down with him for like 2.5 hours at his cave. He was very generous with his time. He didn't know me. I was like, hey, man, I want to get this right. What are the kind of things that I can do? And then I spent 8 to 12 hours a day for 10 weeks filming that show. And then when I saw the first episode, I had realized that they had cut out probably 95% of what I tried to do.
That sounds about right. That's about the ratio.
Well, you say that. I know the famous statistics for when y'all were filming, you know, 24 hours of footage for 1 hour of footage or whatever. But in my case, it wasn't that. It was everything that I was trying to recapitulate, all the like sciencey things, like, you know, how can you climb up a wall just with atmospheric pressure? How do you actually calculate a velocity from a high speed camera and, you know, the bars? I did all these pieces to camera in a very Adam like way that I was trying to do. And without fail, I think every single one of those were cut. So looking back, I can't say it's an overall positive feeling I have looking back on it, because I tried really, really hard. And if I knew they just wanted a host person, I mean, there's a lot of people in Hollywood that look like this. So, I don't know. It was a very interesting, experience, to say the least. At one point, you know, Dan and the rest of the producers, we were just kind of saying like, well, why don't we just give Kyle a bunch of construction lessons and like building lessons over the next 6 to 8 months and just have him try to do, you know, what he's trying to do with the show. And, you know, I was a super fan. I still am. And I don't know if everything was in the right spot. We're like, well, maybe instead of, and you just spoke to him, well, maybe instead of having a bunch of Alan Pans try to make a car eject a seat, maybe we should just hire someone who's good at talking about stuff and things. I don't know. Yeah. So, very interesting experience. And, of course, shortly after I met you guys, and that was another tick on the bucket list for me at the time.
There was a point when my daughter was like 3 years old and she was chewing on her toes. And I realized that, like, I never clipped her toenails. She had gone wolf style and been chewing off her own, like, mangled toenails for years. I thought that maybe, like, her dad was clipping them, but, like, no. She was just eating them like a wolf baby.
My baby's doing the same. Well, baby, she's 4 years old, but she'll be on the couch watching TV, and she just sticks her foot into her mouth and just starts clipping.
I mean, is that how you, like, do your toenails?
I can't reach my toes. I can't get my mouth to my toe. I'm not as flexible as I used to be, Carrie.
Well, then how do you clip your toenails, Tori?
Pa-ching. This is the edgy nail cutter. I've never really been a nail clipper. But these, they're very comfortable and very well designed, and it just makes it easy.
What I like about Edgy is you don't need a nail file after you use the cutters. They're not like the old traditional clippers that just kind of like crush and mangle your nails. They just feel like a soft edge.
Edgy uses a single blade cutting system that slices through the nail rather than crushing it. It requires less force, giving you better precision and control.
The smooth, clean cut helps reduce cracking and peeling, so it leaves nails looking neater and less likely to trap dirt and bacteria, leaving less opportunities for snags, infections, and damage.
Visit edgy.com/mythfits. That's EDJY/mythfits. Visit today to get both finger and toenail cutters.
I want to take a minute to talk to parents, because this is something I didn't fully appreciate until recently. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is showing up earlier and earlier in kids. And I've learned it's about more than just seeing clearly in class. If myopia progresses over time without being addressed, it can lead to bigger vision challenges down the road. That's why I'm glad conversations around children's eye health are changing. When you take your child to an eye doctor, you're not just getting a prescription. You're getting insight into how their eyes are developing and what options might help support them in the long term. One of those options is Essilor Stellest lenses. They're designed specifically for kids and used as part of a myopia management approach, all while still correcting everyday vision. And from what I understand, they're worn just like regular glasses, nothing complicated for kids or parents. Every child is different, so the best place to start is with a comprehensive eye exam. For me, it's about being proactive now to help protect their vision for the future. Visit Essilor.com to learn more about Stellest lenses and to find an Essilor expert eye care professional near you. That's Essilor.com.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
What was it like filming? Were they doing, was everybody there like camp? Were they staying there? Because it was from people from all over the U.S. There was like a dozen science communicators that they brought in.
Yeah.
What was the atmosphere?
Yes, to answer your question, it was a camp. I don't know personally too many stories because I didn't ask about them, but...
But maybe, you heard rumors. You
maybe
heard
Alan,
some,
maybe you Alan heard... told you, but a bunch of young, very introverted kids in one location for 10 weeks.
Are you saying it got Comic-Con freaky? Did it get Comic-Con freaky up in there?
I heard reports of doing shots off of one kid's abs. The very young man. I believe he. I don't know how much I can say. He also lied about his age to get on the show.
Oh wait,
said he was older or younger? Older.
He said he was older. He was a young kid working at a. It wasn't SpaceX. I think it was another rocket company. Maybe it was SpaceX. Anyway, he lied. He had abs. People were doing shots off of it at night. I don't know. It was.
Oh my God. Mythbusters the Search was crazy. Way more fun than Mythbusters.
Well,
just went home at night. So you were hosting the Search. Mm. Were you hosting the Search and then they asked you to host Punkin' Chunkin' with us?
This may have been during some of the filming when it was kind of an effort to introduce me to the science Discovery Channel ecosystem where we're just about done filming in October of 2016. And then I think in November of 2016, that's when we all went to wherever the hell it was. to do Punkin' Chunkin'. And that was, we can get into it, but the idea was, and why I was excited was, of course, working with you two, but then, you know, it was kind of my foot in the door, right? And be like,
yeah,
Kyle's here. He's Discovery stuff now. And then that didn't go.
That blew up in everybody's face.
We should probably set the stage for what this is in case you guys haven't seen Punkin' Chunkin'. Punkin' Chunkin' was this thing that we hosted every year for Jamie and Adam hosted, I think, the first year, but is a competition where people try to fling a pumpkin by mechanical means like trebuchets, air cannons, catapults, as far as they can. And it can get up to a mile. And they always do it around November after Thanksgiving is over. I don't know, maybe for the opportunity to have more pumpkins, but this was 2016 was the last one we hosted, and it never made air because there was a bit of a mishap.
Well, you say mishap, but
yeah, God, I think we've talked about this in previous episodes of MythFits podcast, but this was like one of the most dangerous events. It was just all these locals. It was all volunteer. Nobody was getting paid. And they would build these crazy machines in their garages or their shops. And then they would wheel them out to this field. And a lot of these machines were incredible, but a lot of times they would break. And when things broke on such a large scale, you know, energized machine, bad things can happen. And, you know, many times that, like one time, an air cannon, its cannon, the cannon shot off the rig and landed next to our trailer and almost hit our trailer. One time there was a trebuchet that exploded under all that tension, and I was standing right next to it and pieces are flying everywhere. And so it was like, and that's why Jamie stopped hosting it, because he was like, this is way too dangerous. Like, somebody's going to get killed.
To your point, it wasn't like regulated. And
at all.
No. Right. So you have these very smart people building these very, I mean, for the audience, I mean, we're talking about like 10 meter, like 30 feet tall things that people have to go up on and load industrial strength rubber bands into until the amount of potential energy in these things was terrifying. I have a similar story where with the spotters, one of the pumpkins was shot straight up in the air and everyone just had to watch and hope they didn't get killed by a pumpkin and move out of the way. The scarier one was, I was standing next to these engineer dudes, all of them wearing a hard hat. And they're cranking this thing, it's under tension, blah, blah, blah. Whole thing snaps. The cable holding a carabiner for the trebuchet release or whatever it was, whips off, hits him directly in the forehead.
Oh, dude.
Dents the hard hat inward, which I haven't seen before. And he takes, and like Saving Private Ryan or some shit, he takes off the helmet, looks at him, he's like, and I'm standing this close to him. He's like, glad I was wearing one of these, huh? And I'm like,
whoa.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I'm glad you didn't have your head didn't explode in front of me.
Yeah, dude. And you'd be dead right now if you didn't have that on. Yeah.
It would have been like in my face. And it was just like, from then on, you both told me when I got there, it's like, this is why Adam and Jamie don't come here anymore. And I very quickly realized that. And then, of course, after 36 hours of filming or 48 hours of filming, within film days are hard. They're very long. They're very tough. And then within like 2 hours of being totally done, wrap, send it to Discovery, something horrible happened. It was.
Yeah.
Well, I was still filming stand-ups at this point. Mm. And I was with my director and film crew, and we were just getting like last minute little shots at the end of the day. And there is a safety zone that's supposed to keep the audience that are out there watching away from the actual machines.
And safety zone, it's like maybe 25 yards
of
empty space, right? So it's like you have the line of the machines that fire the pumpkins, you have the people operating standing behind the machines, and then we are allowed to run around with, you know, next to the machines filming. But then there's this whole space that goes the entire length of the field that's 25 feet back. And then that's where the crowd is, behind a fence. Like, that's
it. I remember that's the how safety. Many times you and I would be saying, I think we're too close. Yeah, I think we're too close. But like, they want to get the shot because they want to illustrate the danger. They want to get up in the machinery. They want to make a show about it. And it's if you haven't been to this before, I don't think you really understand the danger. It just seems like a lot of fun and a lot of cool engineering. But we were definitely in an area that was a little too close.
No.
One of those air cannons exploded. Yeah. And pieces of metal, like, you wouldn't realize how heavy this stuff is, because when it went up into the air, it looked like paper scattering. But a piece of metal the size of a car door came flinging through the air. Everybody's screaming, heads up. But our director, who was new, she didn't look up. She started to run away.
Ugh.
And the car door smashed the top of her head. Ugh. And went underneath her helmet. And she went down. And I was like right there with them. And I went a little nuts.
Yeah,
went shelled into my body, and I didn't know what was happening. And I was like pacing around going like, I was like, no, I don't know who hit. I don't know who it hit. Like, just kind of, I was a mess.
No, it was really unbelievable. Yeah. And not to be, too morbid about it, but you know, in case the audience never heard about this, the director, thankfully, wasn't killed. She easily could have been, but she was severely injured. I think she lost vision in one eye. I haven't kept up with her, but she had, because we were in the middle of nowhere, she had to be helicoptered out of there. All of us were I was in shock because I'm a new kid. I didn't really know you. I didn't know you guys personally. You know, I'm just this discovery implant into the show. And I don't know if I'm exaggerating or my memory's done after that, but probably within 20 to 30 minutes after the helicopter left, the entire production was shut down and we were driving out of there.
Yeah.
They told us that
shut everything down.
Was
it's done.
Dead.
Yes.
They told us she died, and we were back at the trailer just kind of shaking, not knowing what was happening. Well, it was like a good half hour before.
And
they
I think
told
news
us that,
news was already coming out about.
Yeah. Well, one of the producers, he was on the phone. I was standing next to him outside the trailer because I was just like, "Oh my god!" Like, I don't know if she's going to survive this. And he was talking to the paramedic at the hospital, and he's all, "Is she alive?" And he said it was a fatal injury. He kept saying, he was like, please repeat it again. It was a fatal injury. She is not alive. And then that's when we just all broke down and we were like, oh my God, for a TV show, somebody just got killed. And for, I don't know, like at least an hour, we all thought that she was dead.
It was horrible. And I remember, maybe to lighten the mood a little bit, I remember the next morning I was so thinking about anything that I took the first Uber that showed up, and it was Tori's Uber, and I took it from him, and he had to wait at the hotel at like 2 a.m. And he got to the airport, and he got to the airport, he's like, dude, I was supposed to come with you. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know.
You're like, I'm in shock.
I'm sorry. I took out a $20 bill. I was like, I could pay for an Uber if you want.
My
I'm
God.
Sorry.
You I'm poor guy. You're like totally in shock. But thankfully, she survived. And that was like, we were like, thank God. Like,
and then afterwards, Discovery was very kind. They sent us all a travel bag from the merch store that said Travel Channel on it.
That healed everything. But needless to say, this episode never aired, and it was like, aired.
And this was also the end of Pumpkin Chunkin'.
Yeah, that's
it
right.
It was.
I used to burn through so many of my clothes when we would weld on MythBusters.
I think everything I had tiny little holes in it.
Yeah.
Hot metal and sparks and I need long lasting clothing. I'm not as hard on my clothes anymore, but I still feel like they wear out pretty quickly.
You know what I always say, Carrie?
What's that?
A thoughtfully built wardrobe comes down to pieces that mix well and last. That's where Quince shines. Premium fabrics, thoughtful design, and everyday essentials that feel effortless to wear and dependable even as the seasons change.
Actually, Tori, I love the Quince sweatshirt you have. It seems like it's really high quality.
Yeah.
Is it like soft? Is it comfortable?
It's my go-to. I love it.
Quince has the everyday essentials that you love with quality that lasts. Lightweight cashmere sweaters, short-sleeve Mongolian cashmere polos, linen bottoms and shorts, tees in 100% Pima cotton, and European jersey linen. These are the versatile pieces that make a wardrobe actually work season to season.
Quince works directly with top factories and cuts out the middleman. You're not paying for brand markup or fancy retail stores, just quality clothing.
Right now, go to quince.com/mythfits for free shipping and 365-day returns. That's a full year to build your wardrobe and love it. And you will. Now available in Canada, too. Don't keep settling for clothes that don't last. Go to quince.com/mythfits for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/mythfits.
I want to take a minute to talk to parents, because this is something I didn't fully appreciate until recently. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is showing up earlier and earlier in kids. And I've learned it's about more than just seeing clearly in class. If myopia progresses over time without being addressed, it can lead to bigger vision challenges down the road. That's why I'm glad conversations around children's eye health are changing. When you take your child to an eye doctor, you're not just getting a prescription. You're getting insight into how their eyes are developing and what options might help support them in the long term. One of those options is Essilor Stellest lenses. They're designed specifically for kids and used as part of a myopia management approach, all while still correcting everyday vision. And from what I understand, they're worn just like regular glasses, nothing complicated for kids or parents. Every child is different, so the best place to start is with a comprehensive eye exam. For me, it's about being proactive now to help protect their vision for the future. Visit Essilor.com to learn more about Stellest lenses and to find an Essilor expert eye care professional near you. That's Essilor.com.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Because before this, again, if you never watched this show, beloved Mythbits, but this was the last in a string of things that of really bad accidents that happened. I think the thing right before that almost got Chunkin fully canceled was wasn't a guy on an ATV going to check distance and his ATV flipped and he snapped his neck or something like that.
He broke his back. These spotters, you know, and this is the kind of just calmness. Everybody was just so like relaxed around these crazy machines and what they were doing. And like you're saying, when that guy got hit in the head with the carabiner and he's like, "Well, I'm glad I wore my hard hat." Like that was kind of the vibe out there. It was like, stuff goes wrong, but we're Woo-hoo! Always good. We never get hurt. So it's so relaxed.
And that's when the machines get you.
Exactly. But then you have these spotters out on ATVs in the field and pumpkins are getting launched at them and they're chasing after the pumpkins to measure how far they go. So basically this one guy is hauling ass through the field. And then there was this water ditch. He hit the water ditch going, I don't know, 30 miles an hour, and it launched him and the ATV landed on him. And I think he broke his back. And had to get helivacked out.
But Kyle, you've done some really cool stuff. I was watching a video of yours the other day that just kind of blew me away because the fact that you've become like the nuclear guy, like you went to Chernobyl
to
see the actual. But I was, please explain to me how you got invited to Chernobyl to profile what actually happened during that disaster.
Yeah, and I don't.
And why? Don't, why would you go?
Yeah, and I don't know when this episode is coming out, but it's possible that by the time this comes out, I will be in Ukraine or have just gotten back because I'm going back. even during wartime. But to answer why the hell would I do that? I stumbled upon a very successful format on YouTube that was more like true crimey mini documentary kind of thing. And I had this essay I had written about this very cursed object on the internet called the elephant's foot. And it's the shape of melted reactor core beneath Chernobyl. And it had become very famous on the internet as kind of this meme thing, like, you know, this is the deadliest thing you'll ever see kind of thing. Anyway, I had written an essay about it. I turned it into a video and it became the most successful thing I had ever done. And it still is. It's got like 20 million views or something like
that. Wow.
And so after that, I tried to keep replicating the format with similar nuclear related things. My background is in engineering, so I could kind of, it wasn't nuclear engineering, but I can kind of understand all of that stuff. So I kept trying to do that. And after those just were continuously popular, I call them my Half-Life histories. But after those were continuously popular, one of my members said, hey, because I attract a certain kind of audience. One of my members was like, hey, my wife is going to Chernobyl this year. Wow. Do you want to go? And what it was a group of first responders and scientists and other specialists who routinely go to Chernobyl in Ukraine to kind of have like a cultural exchange, talk with their engineers, learn what it's like to work around and move within a very contaminated environment, and everything else you could learn. I mean, it's one of the only two places on Earth that is like that. So it's very interesting in that way. This was right before the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. So there wasn't any of that looming over me. Mm-hmm. And at the time, having just been making armchair documentary stuff, like, yeah, this might be dangerous. I get this opportunity. I felt like it was a once in a life thing and I went. Wow. And then I spent 8 hours a day for 5 days walking around the exclusion zone, talking to scientists. I went inside. I'm one of the few civilians to go inside the dome that houses the sarcophagus with the famous chimney, of course. After that, the die was kind of cast. I leaned full into nuclear stuff, and I seemed
now
to be
you're the nuke dude.
Now I'm the rad dad.
And you know, so, what is the long term effects of? Because I mean, I know that this is a big, like a tourism thing, right? Chernobyl.
It was
and
it's wild. Like
there's all these, you know, tour guides that you can actually go and check out the zone.
There's tours. How do they protect everybody from radiation?
There's
a two-part answer to that. It's
okay.
So specifically after the HBO miniseries, yeah. I was told that people were coming through the zone like 1,000 to 2,000 people a day, which is insane for this area, in my opinion. How do they protect people from the radiation? Two-part question. Part one, the radiation ambient really isn't high enough to, if you walked through the area and out in a day, nothing's going to happen to you. The actual numbers aren't that high. There are things that you could do in the zone that would be very stupid.
Like what? Drink the water?
You can't eat and drink outside. Anything down on the ground. There's radiation monitors when you enter and leave the zone to see if you're tracking anything.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, just to be safe, I mean, from a real radiological health physics perspective, it's not that bad. If you want to know the dumb stuff, yeah, there's contaminated pieces of equipment you could sit in for a while. There's hot particles, actual particles of fuel from the exploded reactor that are incredibly radioactive. And if you were to inhale one of those or something like that, that would be bad. But if you are just walking a well-trodden path in Pripyat and then out for a couple hours, it's not a radiological problem.
Damn, Kyle, your career has taken such a non-linear, strange
route. What a weird spot.
Starting out as just, you know, a host on a nerdy TV show to moving all the way to becoming a YouTube creator to now just specializing in such a wild scientific field. Like, yeah. It's been crazy to watch your come up, and not just the length of your hair growing.
Or your facial.
And the beard.
Or your facial hair.
Every year I add an inch.
Just watching how you've developed in and the entire evolution of your career is so fascinating. And I want everybody, where can the audience find Kyle Hill now if they want to go look for you?
Oh, sure. I mean, you can just type my name into YouTube. I should probably be the first one that pops up. Don't do it on Wikipedia because I'm not 6'7" and I did not play for the Cavaliers. I do have a sick J though. Kyle Hill on YouTube would probably be the easiest place to find me. And, through that, I'm sure you guys do, you can do membership stuff like Patreon and join Discords and all that sort of thing. If you want to talk more stuff, the fun part about this weird little space that we're in is that we do have some of the nerdiest people you can imagine every day talking to each other, from computer scientists to nuclear submarine operators to, yeah, it's very cool.
So good to see you. Thank you, Kyle, for coming on. I'm just so happy for all your success.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thank you having me on. Thanks to all the MythFits for listening. And yeah, hopefully I can come back soon and tell you whether or not I'm sterile now from
I can't have kids.
Are they yourself one of them two-headed dogs?
I just want them anyway.
They just got web feet.
They can swim real fast. It's cool.
Sorry, I've been noticing lately you're getting a little bit of that silver fox thing happening.
You know, it's crazy. Last night, my wife found a single white eyebrow hair.
That's what having children will do to you. You start going gray.
You know what, Carrie? We're in luck because one of our sponsors is now Aerie. What if going gray wasn't something you had to hide? What if you could slow the process, keep your natural color longer, and give your hair the support it needs to stay soft and healthy? That's exactly what Aerie is designed to do.
As hair grays, it tends to become drier, rougher, and more wiry, which can make it harder to manage. The Shower Duo is designed for care for aging hair. It gently cleanses without stripping the natural moisture, helping support hair as it changes over time. Personally, I love the scalp rub because I do think that as your hair gets gray, it kind of flies away. So it's been making it like a lot more moisturized.
With consistent use, hair can feel softer, shinier, and noticeably more manageable.
Upgrade a routine you already have. You're already washing your hair. The Shower Duo simply upgrades that everyday step to better support hair as it ages. For a limited time, our listeners get 15% off by using code MythFits at Aerie.com. Just head to Aerie.com and use code MythFits and you're all set.
After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. So please support our show and tell them we sent you.
I want to take a minute to talk to parents because this is something I didn't fully appreciate until recently. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is showing up earlier and earlier in kids. And I've learned it's about more than just seeing clearly in class. If myopia progresses over time without being addressed, it can lead to bigger vision challenges down the road. That's why I'm glad conversations around children's eye health are changing. When you take your child to an eye doctor, you're not just getting a prescription. You're getting insight into how their eyes are developing and what options might help support them in the long term. One of those options is Essilor Stellest lenses. They're designed specifically for kids and used as part of a myopia management approach, all while still correcting everyday vision. And from what I understand, they're worn just like regular glasses, nothing complicated for kids or parents. Every child is different, so the best place to start is with a comprehensive eye exam. For me, it's about being proactive now to help protect their vision for the future. Visit Essilor.com to learn more about Stellest lenses and to find an Essilor expert eye care professional near you. That's Essilor.com.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Welcome back, MythFits. Carrie, it was so good to talk to Kyle. He's
funny awesome. How long we've actually known him. And I've really enjoyed his evolution. Like the docuseries yeah. stuff he's doing now is so different than, like, you know, he was YouTube guy. He was, you know, big energy science. Like this is, it's gotten cool. Like I like the dark cool.
You know what though? Talking about going to Chernobyl and having all that exposure, it reminded me of the myth that we tested that only cockroaches will survive a nuclear holocaust. And so we went out to this facility in Washington. And so we had all these different insects and we exposed these insects to some radiation. And we had these tags, these badges around our necks. So that way we knew how much exposure we were getting because, you know, they had lead doors, lead windows that kept us, you know, somewhat protected. But I remember after us testing that, all of a sudden I got like my face turned red. I had a fever.
Really?
And they were like, holy crap, you might have been exposed. And I'm like freaking out because I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, what is this going to do? And they took all of our badges after we left the facility. And then yeah. They would test the badge to see how much radiation was there. Turns out I didn't get exposed. I must have just had like a flu or something. I got, you know, flushed in a fever. But I was so nervous. I thought I was exposed to radiation. I was like, I'm going to die.
I got
for this
nuked.
Show.
Yeah, because all the cockroaches basically died when we nuked them.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Total myth busted.
I remember we were having a little bit of an outtakes bumbling day because somebody made a joke about when George Bush said nuclear.
Yes.
And so like all of a sudden in your head, when you get nervous because the camera would start rolling, you're like, yeah. wait, how do you say it? No, it's nuclear. No, wait, nuclear? Like what?
Nuclear. Yeah, I totally remember that. And it was just like,
they totally messed us up.
Nuclear. Did I say it right?
You would
nuclear.
You'd say it right. And then yeah. you would question yourself because you're
and
like,
you
wait,
screw
what?
Up
wait,
the
wait.
Take. Yeah. That was a weird lab. That was a weird experiment. Very cool.
It was a good myth, though. I can't believe we actually got to test. Like, I remember when that myth came up on the board, we're like, how are we going to test that?
Yeah.
And we actually figured out a way. It's kind of awesome.
And spoiler alert, some insects were harmed in the making of that episode. all right. Are we ready for a fan question?
It is that time of the podcast where we have a fan question. Let's see. I believe this question comes from Maddie.
Hi, Myth. It's Maddie here. Big fan of both Mythbusters and the new podcast. And I've got a question for you. Previously, Adam has stated that a lot of the experts that appeared on Mythbusters were scarecrows, truly outstanding in their field. While others maybe weren't all they were advertised to be and were only made to look good due to the efforts of the cast, crew, and the edit, but he didn't mention anybody specifically. So I was wondering, did the two of you have a similar experience on Mythbusters? And if so, want to name names?
He's trying to get us in trouble. Do you remember? I felt like all the experts were experts. Like, I don't remember anybody.
There was a time. Maybe not. Maybe they were experts, but maybe they were questionable. I remember when we were testing. Red flag to a bull, right?
Yeah.
And we were talking about how you know the bulls didn't see the same as we do. They actually can't see the color red.
Oh.
So it was the motion and not red,
right.
Because their eyes don't actually let them even see red. And we brought on an expert, but at the time, Discovery might be cashing in on some partnerships here. And originally, we always got experts that we sourced because they were at the top of their field or they were doing something interesting or they came from a research lab. But Discovery Channel had made like $1 million deal with the University of Phoenix, which was an online school.
Oh, yeah.
And so we had to use two of their experts in episodes. And though this person might have been an expert in what they do, they were sort of just adjacent to the field that we needed them for, but they sent them anyway. And so we were on a ranch. Testing red flag to a bull, which, by the way, you were such a badass. You actually got in the ring with those. I don't know how you did it. You trusted those rodeo clowns.
A true jackass
so
moment.
Hard. you're dressed like a, you know, like a B-boy in your red sweatsuit up in the field. But yeah. Then, you know, Grant and I were talking to
that was,
the expert.
That was my suggestion. I was like, let's do red flag to a bull. We'll put on different colored sweatsuits, see which one they come to. And then nobody else wanted to do it. And then I was like, okay, Tori, you got to do it. And I'm like, oh, shoot. No, I'm the idiot.
The professor who showed up on set coming to an active ranch, I guess didn't read the call sheet, came in flip-flops, which first of all, you gotta have closed-toed shoes if you're going to come into an atmosphere like this, and then didn't actually know the answer to any of our questions. And
was this,
came
this
with
is about
a sheet
the eye
that they
of the
had
bull?
Printed off of Wikipedia.
Oh, man.
She was reading ahead of time something
lazy.
She read on Wikipedia, but that's it was lazy. Like, our expert from the University of Phoenix. And I'm like, oh, man.
This was to explain the bull's eye, right? The bull's, like the cones and the rods. What colors can they see? Can they see colors?
Yeah, they actually, she grabbed an actual eyeball. It was just like she had a bag of these gooey actual eyes to explain it. And we didn't need that. That could have been covered with a graphic. There was no reason to hold on to the eye they were talking about. I'm like, at least they didn't get it off of Wikipedia.
That's funny.
So I'm sort of naming names without actually naming a name.
Call out somebody without actually calling them out. Nice work, Carrie. Very, you should be a politician. Very diplomatic. Well, thank you guys for joining us again, MythFits. We love you guys. You guys are rad.
Thanks, Maddie, for that question. If you guys want to leave us a video question so we can see your pretty faces, go to MythFitsPodcast.com. And as always, we now have an ad-free platform. So
nobody likes ads.
Become a band of MythFits. Like, follow, subscribe, stay weird as you can.
Well, not too weird. Come on.
Yeah, a little weird.
A little weird.
I mean, I kind of like it weird.
Pioneer. What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Jones Topsoil has been delivering topsoil, mulch, sand, and gravel. For greener lawns and brighter flower beds, call 1-800-TOPSOIL. Order online at jonestopsoil.com.
Jones Topsoil brings it home to you.